I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also Jeff's Guitar Clinic, and the law firm of Gingras, Thompson, and Walks. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. John, let's start out with talking about the impeachment vote yesterday. We're recording this on Thursday morning. Here is the junior senator from Utah.
The grave question the Constitution tasks senators to answer is whether the president committed an act so extreme and egregious that it rises to the level of a high crime and misdemeanor. Yes, he did. The president asked a foreign government to investigate his political rival. The president withheld vital military funds from that government to press it to do so. The president delayed funds for an American ally at war with Russian invaders. The president's purpose was personal and political. Accordingly, the president is guilty of an appalling abuse of public trust. What he did was not perfect. No, it was a flagrant assault on our electoral rights, our national security, and our fundamental values. Corrupting an election to keep oneself in office is perhaps the most abusive and destructive violation of one's oath of office that I can imagine. In the last several weeks, I've received numerous calls and texts. Many demanded in their words that I stand with the team. I can assure you that that thought has been very much on my mind. You see, I support a great deal of what the president has done. I voted with him 80% of the time. But my promise before God to apply impartial justice required that I put my personal feelings and political biases aside. Were I to ignore the evidence that has been presented and disregard what I believe my oath and the Constitution demands of me for the sake of a partisan end, it would, I fear, expose my character to history's rebuke and the censure of my own conscience. I'm aware that there are people in my party and in my state who will strenuously disapprove of my decision, and in some quarters, I will be vehemently denounced. I'm sure to hear abuse from the president and his supporters. Does anyone seriously believe that I would consent to these consequences other than from an inescapable conviction that my oath before God demanded it of me? I sought to hear testimony from John Bolton, not only because I believed he could add context to the charges, but also because I hoped that what he might say could raise reasonable doubt and thus remove from me the awful obligation to vote for impeachment. Like each member of this deliberative body, I love our country. I believe that our Constitution was inspired by Providence. I am convinced that freedom itself is dependent on the strength and vitality of our national character. As it is with each senator, my vote is an act of conviction. We've come to different conclusions, fellow senators, but I trust we have all followed the dictates of our conscience. I acknowledge that my verdict will not remove the president from office. The results of this Senate court will, in fact, be appealed to a higher court, the judgment of the American people. Voters will make the final decision, just as the president's lawyers have implored. My vote will likely be in the minority in the Senate. But irrespective of these things, with my vote, I will tell my children and their children that I did my duty to the best of my ability. believing that my country expected it of me. I will only be one name among many, no more, no less, to future generations of Americans who look at the record of this trial. They will note merely that I was among the senators who determined that what the president did was wrong, grievously wrong. We are all footnotes at best in the annals of history, but in the most powerful nation on earth, the nation conceived in liberty and justice, that distinction is enough for any citizen.
You know, there are moments where Mitt Romney, who I don't have terribly high regard for his political or business career, there are moments where his back against the wall, if you remember the night that he lost in 2012, where he gave a very eloquent speech where he is just capable of sounding majestic.
He is the son of a great man. And he is, and he did learn some things at the footsteps of his father, George Romney, who, importantly, it's very important to remember, George Romney was a Republican. In fact, in many ways, he was the great Republican hope of the mid to late 1960s. He didn't succeed politically as a presidential candidate, but he was governor of Michigan.
Can you speak up just a little?
He didn't succeed as a presidential candidate, but he was governor of Michigan. And the interesting thing about George Romney was that repeatedly when the critical test came, he didn't always do the right thing. I'm not going to try and make him into some sort of saint. But when the critical test came, he often amazed people. He embraced the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement in a state that was very divided, where George Wallace was a very viable political figure. He embraced worker rights, public employees, did things that even some Democratic governors didn't do. And so the interesting thing is that in this family's history, and also in history of his mother, by the way, who was a leading advocate for women's rights and reproductive freedom, they have stood courageously beyond the narrow zones of political discourse. I think Mitt Romney disappointed a lot of people because he didn't always do that in his career. He did do it yesterday. And I think that a lot of media may underestimate, not all of it, mind you, but a lot of media may underestimate the core of what was driving him there. And it was at the start of his remarks where he spoke about an oath to God, an oath before God. And for Romney, that's a big, big deal. It's a huge deal. And in many ways, although I genuinely don't think he intended it quite that way, it was a rebuke to his fellow Republican senators who swore the same oath. And then the other part of his speech is he comes from a family that is deeply political, has been politically engaged forever, or generations now. So it was intriguing that he inserted political analysis into his speech. He talked about the judgment of history, but he also talked about the judgment of voters. And he said the president's lawyers have invoked the will of the people in the next election, and that's where some of this will be resolved. And again, I don't know. He's not a stupid man, so he had to be conscious of this. Didn't that sound like a brutal rebuke of Susan Collins and Cory Gardner?
Well, it sure did.
Some of the others, Lamar Alexander.
It sure did. Well, and you know they're going to have to live with how they voted and how they rationalized it.
I could see that portion of the speech. It'll be left to the voters, as the president said, should be left to the voters. I could see that turning up in campaign hands.
Well, there are very few surprises in Washington, but this one yesterday really the White House was shocked. They were about to have a scrum with the media. At the White House, they canceled it.
Yeah. Well, I think the White House doesn't know the Senate well, right? That's an important thing to understand. They rely entirely on the Senate Majority Leader to tell them, what's happening. And I'm sure that they had to get McConnell's, assurance. And McConnell had his people wired, basically. But I'm sure they were terrified. Oh, my gosh. That this is sort of, it had the potential, and obviously it didn't turn out to be the case, to be the answer to Adam Schiff's call. Remember that Adam Schiff, in his closing remarks, said, if just one of you stands up, if just one of you does the right thing, you know, that has so much potential, so much possible resonance. You know, obviously, you know, riffing a little bit there, but I'm sure they were terrified for a moment. And then, of course, they shouldn't have been, because McConnell did have, you know, control of the process. And more importantly, more relevantly, look, this is Trump's party. Basically, you know, Mitt Romney was speaking from the past, you know, maybe for the future if you're romantic about stuff. But really, he was, you know, he's like a last echo of his father's party.
All right. So, other side of the aisle, not only did Mitt Romney make history being the first senator from a party to convict his own president, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Doug Collins of Alabama, who didn't surprise me at, Doug Jones of Alabama, who didn't surprise me at all with his vote, because he is a courageous man. And then, of course,
I can just interrupt you there, Sly.
Yeah.
When you've prosecuted segregationist murderers and Klansmen,
and people that burned abortion clinics,
the most brutal cases. In American jurisprudence, difficult cases in many ways. Politicians putting pressure on you doesn't really, I think you can handle it.
You can handle it. And then, of course, Kristen Sinema from Arizona.
That was more of a surprise to me.
Right. But Manchin, interesting call there. I think he was just kind of pushed to his limit. He knows West Virginia very well. He knows he's going to get flack for this, but I think he also knows that he's got to look himself in the mirror. And he's also got to look at his Democratic flank in that state, because it is significant. And I don't think he could live with voting to acquit Donald Trump. I don't think he could live with himself.
Well, remember, there's the interesting thing about West Virginia. West Virginia's gone for Trump. And they'll undoubtedly go for Trump again. I think that's likely. Although, if Sanders is a Democratic nominee, perhaps he could crack into some of that state. But, you know, Robert Byrd, long past, Robert Byrd taught that state to have a certain reverence for the Constitution. And my sense is that Manchin is betting that even among folks who vote for Donald Trump, there is an understanding that Trump is a bad player. And you may vote for Trump because you are so desperate economically that you look for anything. You look for something to hold on to. And I don't necessarily say that's an excuse, but I think that is something that happens in politics. But that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody else who's very much on your side, like a Manchin, couldn't speak to you in a nuanced way about the flaws of the guy. So I think Manchin knows his state well enough to have cast that vote.
Well, you know, in that state, he knows his state well enough. Literally, he literally knows his voters.
And that's the Robert Byrd model,
right,
too.
Right.
You know, there's a famous story. When Gaylord Nelson was a young U.S. senator, he said he went to Robert Byrd, and he said to Byrd at some point, "Wow, you're really," I think it was Gaylord, I believe it was, "so you're really good at getting votes. You're a very successful political figure. How do you do it?" And Byrd said, "Well, come by my office on Saturday afternoon if you're around town." And Nelson was, so he went by, and Byrd said, "Here, let me show you how I do it." And Byrd took out this big box, right? And he just pulled out a card and called, says, "Mrs. Smith, yeah, it's your Senator Robert Byrd. Yeah, I just checking in. Did your grandkid get into college? Did that work out?" I put a word in for him. I'm glad it worked out. Byrd kept a list of everybody who had asked him for something and had done, and he sat around and called him. You know, that's a physical connection that we lose sight of in politics.
Right, right. So, obviously, the reaction yesterday was what you would expect on Fox. And I haven't watched Fox for a very long time. But I thought, after this is the night to record the reaction. So here is Sean Hannity.
I know a lot of you, especially in Utah and around the country, are mad at Mitt tonight, and you have every right to be, as far as I am concerned. Frankly, it is sad. Mitt Romney is now a diminished figure. Clearly, losing a presidential election ruins people. You don't believe me? Look at Al Gore, look at Hillary Clinton, and even to some extent, I would argue, John McCain. I like Mitt Romney. I don't regret fighting hard for him in 2012. He clearly cannot accept and get over the fact that he lost. He absolutely could have won in 2012. He did not fight. The difference between him and Donald Trump is Donald Trump fought every single day, was tough and tough enough to win. The president pointed this out tonight in a brand new ad that is beyond powerful and sadly truthful. Take a look.
Slick, slippery, stealthy. Mitt Romney had us fooled.
Being in Donald Trump's magnificent hotel and having his endorsement is a delight.
Posing as a Republican, he tried to infiltrate Trump's administration as Secretary of State.
President-elect Trump is the very man who can lead us to that better future.
Now his cover's blown, exposed by news reports as a Democrat secret asset.
Constitutional scholar Jonathan Turley.
Okay. Infiltrate.
So, okay, here is another wonderful, wonderful person on Fox. Your favorite, Lou Dobbs.
And the party of hate created the greatest political scandal in this country's history and in their historic failure. The Dems joined today by one lone Republican senator, the Senate's chief rhino and longtime never Trumper, the ever petty and pitiful Mitt Romney.
Okay, and one more here, Laura Ingraham.
Utah's junior senator reminded us of why he couldn't connect with most regular working class people. They don't like politicians who claim to be holier than thou when they're really just sticking a shiv in your back.
My promise before God to apply impartial justice required that I put my personal feelings and political biases aside. Were I to ignore the evidence that has been presented, it would, I fear, expose my character to history's rebuke.
It's exposed it, all right. He's the ultimate selfish, preening, self-centered politician. He has good hair and a sort of okay singing voice.
America, America, God shed his grace on thee.
It's a shock that didn't work. Well, he should try out for the Masked Singer maybe when he loses re-election. Well, he wanted desperately to be Trump's...
That was brutal.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, I didn't hear any of those people critiquing or pointing out why what he laid out as evidence was wrong.
Of course they didn't. And that hasn't happened through the whole trial, my friend. Hey, you watch Fox, and I know you're the professional at it, and very, very skilled. But can I add one thing to your little soliloquy there?
Sure.
Why not? Something? Got a quote from this morning on Fox and Friends, which is
that's a
go-to place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from Brian Kilmeade.
Oh, sure.
And he says, this is Brian Kilmeade talking about Romney invoking his faith. He says, my faith makes me do this. Are you kidding? What about your faith and this case meld together? That is unbelievable for him to bring religion into this. His faith? Now, the reason I find that intriguing is because at the start of the trial, they all swore an oath to be impartial jurors before God. And I'm sort of thinking to myself, you know, I mean, how do we reconcile
Wait a second. We've got to get Brian Kilmeade signed up with Ann Gehler's group. He's going to be the new leader for separation of church and state on Fox.
Well, and it's such a weird thing.
Just pathetic.
It's awful. But it's also why, by the way, the remarks, I believe, from Laura Ingraham there about how, you know, when he gets defeated are naive because of a misunderstanding of Utah.
It is. Although, truth be told, you know, over the last couple of years, Utah Republicans have sort of become a little more nationalized than they were.
Why?
But still.
Evan McMullen got most of his votes in Utah.
Well, no, I understand that.
Still a lot of
so votes. The latest popularity vote for Romney and Trump in Utah are even. They're about 53%.
So, but let me offer you one thought here. If Mitt Romney wants to continue in the Senate, right?
He will run and he will win.
And here's one of the reasons why. Mitt Romney is a very devout and committed Mormon. And Mormonism is a religion, the Church of the Latter-day Saints, that is rooted in the, you know, kind of westward expansionism, westward experience of the United States, right? It's a very American-rooted religion, and their reverence for the Constitution as divinely inspired is not to be underestimated. There's a lot of that's something that is really much discussed. And so if you're going to attack Mitt Romney for swearing to be an impartial juror before God in a case involving respect for the Constitution, I got a feeling Mitt Romney might win that debate.
All right, we'll take a break. John Nichols, Capital Times, and The Nation at sliceoffice.com. The attorneys at Gingrich, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com. Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the Operating Engineers, Local 139, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Teamsters, Local 695. All right, as we speak, the votes are still being counted in Iowa, almost 5 days after the caucus. I hope they enjoyed their last First in the Nation caucus. Bernie Sanders is the. I looked at Politico before we started recording, and they were at. Pete Buttigieg was at 26.2, of these allegated state delegates. Bernie was at 26.1. The actual delegates they would receive to the DNC, they're both tied at 11. Bernie is about 2,500 votes ahead in the popular vote. Tell me where you think this is going.
Well, if I'm right, and believe me, you looked at Politico, I looked at an alert for the New York Times that found some study they were looking at, it found hundreds of errors in the, you know, corrected numbers coming out from the Iowa part. You know, so this thing is such a mess that I think we have to be very, very careful about presuming that these, you know, later figures, the stuff that they're finally putting out, to presuming that that's going to turn out to be right. Because, you know, yesterday afternoon they had to pull back a set of figures because they assigned Bernie, they appear to have assigned the increase in Bernie Sanders' support to Deval Patrick. Not kidding. This actually happened. And so it's such a disaster, it's such a mess that we have to be cautious. With that said, the remaining areas or the remaining caucuses that apparently will be counted in sometime today. If my read is correct, I think there is still one set of satellite caucuses out. A significant.
And is that from the first congressional district? Is that my understanding?
It's what I understand.
And some of it has to do with how many people participated.
Well, you get more if you get to a higher level.
600 is evidently the number. What?
Yeah. And that would be a big caucus, so you can understand. So anyways, and then there's also some other areas. It's, again, I'm not going to make a prediction, but it does look like some of what is out is pretty good for Sanders. And so there is a very good chance that Mayor Pete's victory speeches and victory messaging.
Mayor Cheat?
No, that's very mean.
I'm just kidding. I don't dislike him as much as you do.
I don't dislike him that much. I'm not the one who just said that.
I was just joking about the fact that that's what people started calling him, because it was a little silly for him to say victory on election night.
Yeah. No, look, I actually think that Pete Buttigieg has quite a bit to recommend him and to pay attention to, and he's actually been a very interesting candidate. I think that's why he did quite well in Iowa. I do think, though, that he perhaps showed a little excess ambition over the last few days. And here's where it gets interesting. The Sanders campaign did something that rewards you not necessarily immediately, but that if you wait for the whole count, could really reward you. And it's interesting that at the end of this thing, this is where this is coming into perspective. They put immense energy, like unimaginable levels of energy, into reaching out to the working class. And they respected the fact that the working class in Iowa includes a lot of immigrants, refugees, Latinos, Muslims, people who speak all sorts of different languages. They really went for it. And a lot of these satellite caucuses, Sly, one of them was at a pork processing, outside a pork processing plant in Ottumwa. And a huge number of the workers there are Ethiopian immigrants, right? Another one was in Cedar Rapids, where apparently they did it with people speaking, I think, 8 different languages. It was a linguistic minority caucus. In Des Moines, they had some caucuses associated with mosques. You know what I mean? All these different, they really did try to reach out for a variety of reasons to people who might not traditionally go to caucuses or might not have been traditionally in the past. And some of the numbers out of these satellite caucuses, remembering that there's still some major ones to come in, would blow your mind, Sly.
So
you're looking at like 95% support for Sanders.
You know, I look back to 1984, and that's a long time ago, but Walter Mondale won the Iowa caucuses easily,
yeah.
Right? He was wired in there. He former vice president, obviously. He won it easily. And then New Hampshire showed his weakness because independents can vote in their primary. And Gary Hart came out of nowhere and won, and then won a series of states. And I remember this because I worked on the Mondale campaign, just praying that Georgia would come through for Walter Mondale, and it did. Mondale actually had a terrible night, but they were able to spin that Georgia meant everything in the world.
Right? Yeah, well, there you go.
So where does this thing lie now? In some respects, I kind of feel sorry for Buttigieg because he's got this shadow over him, and it isn't Biden, it's Bloomberg.
Well, he's got a couple shadows, right? I would argue there's another one. And a lot of people will think that Bernie Sanders was cheated the most here, or that he was harmed the most by the complexity, the delays, the stupidity of the Iowa Democratic Party releasing partial results after a day, right? That's nuts. If you've missed the initial headlines and you're already into the president's State of the Union address, don't just finish the process. Take another day. Get it right. Right? You know what I mean? Don't do partial release, which actually, kind of reinforces perhaps a false impression, right? So, once all this is done, if Buttigieg comes out first, then he'll get his bragging rights, and that'll be that. If Sanders comes out first, he'll be the aggrieved guy who wasn't treated fairly. The person who actually is getting treated quite unfairly in all this is Elizabeth Warren, who had a strong third-place finish, crushed Joe Biden, right? I mean, she beat him bad. And whether you're a Warren fan or you're not, the fact of the matter is she got some bragging rights out of this that have just not been, it hasn't translated. However, if she continues on, there's always people who think that Warren is the big threat to Sanders, or that somehow there's a big division there. And there is some. That's not to be underestimated, that liberals, do kind of look at both of them with regard. But the caucus I was at, right, the competition for, like, Klobuchar backers and for, anybody who might be free to go to another, group, was between Buttigieg and Warren, right? That was where the fight was. It wasn't, Sanders got the Yang people and he got some other folks. Biden got a chunk of the Klobuchar people. But at the end of the day, the real battle was a Warren-Buttigieg battle, and I think that will continue to be the case. And so this becomes a complexity for Buttigieg because He's still going to have that Warren reality on one side of him. He's got also the Bloomberg reality coming at him. And now he has massively inflated expectations. You know, there's this thing of, wow, he's the Gary Hart of 2020. He's the, you know, every year, every election cycle has one of these, you know, Bruce Babbitt, right? Who's rising.
Well, I think Gary Hart did a little better than Bruce Babbitt.
You get my drift, though, I think.
I mean, Gary Hart really had quite a remarkable campaign in 1984, and I didn't even particularly like him, but he did. And of course, no one's going to remember this, but I can't remember how it came to be, but Wisconsin dabbled with caucuses for 1 year, and
it's
1 year only.
Error in 1984. Yeah.
And it was, I remember I dragged my parents along to, to vote for Mondale at Cherokee Middle School. And my dad was so mad because it was just so disorganized. He finally just walked out.
Yeah.
And that was the moment where Sue Bauman started crying because she didn't get to be a Mondale delegate. The people didn't vote for her. It was
I feel bad.
It was quite a traumatic moment. But if you remember that year, Mondale won the caucuses in Wisconsin, but Hart won the beauty contest with the voters.
No, it was a terrible thing. And to his immense credit, Doug LaFollette fought against that ridiculous move. But the important thing to understand is that's sort of the crisis of caucuses in general. You just illustrated it with a two-step process, right? A separate caucus and beauty vote, or beauty contest, whatever they call that. You saw it in real time in Iowa. So on caucus night, if it had been a primary, Bernie Sanders would have won a substantial victory. He was up, you know, a measurable percentage over Buttigieg and the other candidates. Even in what looks to be the final count, we'll have some more come in, but it's very, very likely at this point that in the final count, he'll be up, you know, a measurable percentage of the vote. So he would be that the two-word headline that comes out of Iowa, right? The two-word headline is fill in the blank wins, right? You know, you get that top line, whether it's fair or not. And so he had that on the popular vote, and yet we've just had 3 days where it's been Buttigieg leads.
So former Vice President Biden is now criticizing Pete Buttigieg as not having enough experience, and he's never been anything more than a mayor of a city of 100,000 people. And he's using the S word. If you remember your book, he's using the S word against Bernie Sanders.
Getting a lot of invitations to write things. Like
so, and it, you know, his whole thing, he's running on his experience. Has that ever worked?
Certainly, remember, experience and competence worked incredibly well for Michael Dukakis. If you'll recall, this election's about competence.
Did it work? Did Richard Nixon use that effectively in 1960?
Yeah.
Did Hillary Clinton effectively use that in 2008 and 2016?
Yeah, I mean, look, in fact, the most experienced candidates for president use it all the time, thinking it mattered. Because, you know, when you've spent a huge portion of your life building up the resume, you would like to use it, right? But the last resume president we ever had was George H.W. Bush. Right? And I think it's fair to say that he half inherited that from Reagan, who, despite all Reagan's problems, maintained a certain popularity, and half got it because the Dukakis campaign just didn't work. So, we don't elect resume presidents in this country very often. We elect, you know, and this is maybe good for Buttigieg. He should probably go see Jimmy Carter real fast. You know, we elect, you know, one-term governors of Georgia and former movie actors who had a good two terms as governor of California, but, you know, didn't serve in cabinets or anything like that. We elect, people who, the son of a former president who did a...
We elect people who make an emotional connection with people.
Right, and we elect, you know, I mean, remember that Barack Obama, 4 years before he became president of the United States, was a state senator. You know, he was
who couldn't get in the Democratic convention in L.A. at the Staples Center.
Right, but this is the thing that Barack Obama was the equivalent of many of our able state senators in Wisconsin 4 years earlier, right? And in 4 years, he got elected to the U.S. Senate, which is an amazing breakthrough. But imagine this, Sly. Imagine if Russ Feingold had been a state senator, gets elected to the Senate in 92, and in 96 he's nominated for president, right? I happen to think that Russ Feingold would do fabulously if that had happened. I also happen to think that while there are people who criticize Barack Obama, he did really well on a lot of stuff. He was an honorable president in a whole bunch of ways. And so the lesson is, if I'm Pete Buttigieg, and remember, I'm not, I have many criticisms of Buttigieg, but if Biden wants to attack him on that, I just think he ought to say, you know, yeah, I guess young guys without a lot of experience in Washington, you know, I guess we write them all off, hey?
Well, it is going to be fascinating to see what happens. Right now, James Carville is making TV appearance after TV appearance, and it appears he's going to have a stroke because he is so upset. And I wish he would look inwardly and realize that the conundrum the Democratic Party's in right now is partly because of his making. He can look himself square in the eyes, and the economic policies that he had a great time pushing along with Bill Clinton we're still paying the price for.
And that, by the way, he knew were wrong. He knew those policies were flawed policies because he had actually successfully run against them before he was promoting them.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.